Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
So a couple weeks ago, I was talking to my good friend, Ben Standig, and Ben said to me that he had our former colleague, Michael Lee, on his podcast, and that he started off the podcast by saying that he wanted to talk about something optimistic about the Wizards, not to be like a homer, but just be optimistic. And I posed the question to him, you know what, if you're going to talk about the Wizards and be optimistic, but not be a propagandist, what would you lead off with? What would you say? So now I have Ben Standig on my podcast. And so I'm going to ask him, we're recording at 11:22 PM after the loss to the Hornets. Everybody's hurt. Beal's hurt. Neto's hurt. Bertans is hurt. Gafford got hurt. Everybody's hurt. And I'm going to ask you, Ben, Mr. Standig, welcome, by the way. Welcome to what's basically your podcast now. What would you say, what is your optimistic thing that you're leading off with?
I'd like to say Scott Brooks's walk-off in the press conference tonight, which was like kind of threw us all for a good minute there, but not sure what happened, but all good. I think because we were talking about this during the game, I mean – The actual answer is pretty easy, and that would be Rui Hachimura, right? I mean, if you go into this a season like this, and granted, you know, even I was saying that I thought if everybody stayed healthy and everything went right, they had a chance to be, you know, inside the top eight of the playoffs. And obviously, it doesn't look like that's going to happen, even if they get in somehow. So it's a disappointing year. But like on a bigger picture, the younger guys need to develop. You need to see that progress. They've already traded away one of those younger guys in Troy Brown, and Denny Avdija is definitely hitting the rookie wall at a minimum right now. But Rui Hachimura has definitely, as you asked the question on Twitter, it does feel like he's taken, if not a leap, a step or two in the right direction. He's playing with more confidence. He's more fluid at times offensively. He's got some moves to get offense going, and like, you know, I'm not going to remotely be one of these people who starts putting ridiculous lofty projections based off of a handful of games, but he's definitely improving. And like, you know, for this year, how things have gone, that is what you need to see. Like you said, what's the reason to be optimistic? And I think that's a good one.
Rui's last 10 games, 20.2 points, 7.8 rebounds. He's 53 from the field, 41 from three, 83 from the line. The free throw rate, which is just how often he gets to the line, not the percentage of free throws that he makes, but how often he actually gets there. The free throw rate is not the greatest. It's still low. He's getting there 2.3 times a game. It's actually come down from where he was at early in the year. But just based on the eye test, he's finishing pretty well around the rim, and the overall percentages are ridiculously high. Now, the jump shots aren't going to continue to go in at this level. He's in some ways, he is on a hot streak, but he just looks better cutting off the ball. he's finding teeth within the defense more. You know, I always felt like, and it's something that I've discussed with Seth Part now, and we've never really put anything together on, and I don't know if the numbers back up what I'm about to say, but I always felt like Rui got blocked at the rim too much. Like, I always felt like his layups specifically would just get swatted. And he is finishing, he's dunking everything that he can now. He's finishing with more touch. He's done a better job knowing where to be when he's in the dunker spot. He attributes a lot of it to Russell Westbrook. Who am I to say that it's not on Russ? But the efficiency has skyrocketed. It's not going to stay as high as it is right now. It's 59% true shooting, 57% effective field goal percentage over this 10-game stretch, which is ridiculously high. I mean, that's really, that is a really, really good number. This is the best stretch of his career. If you only get one leap, like people call it the leap, right? If you only get one leap, I don't think this is the leap. But if your life is a series of leaps, I think it's a leap, you know? I think he's getting better. And, you know, I've had moments where I've been skeptical of what Rui is going to be. And I've been skeptical of the organization, you know, talking about how he's a guy who could have a steep improvement arc and how it took a little while to see that. But, you know, if you're someone who has disagreed with me on that, you know, this is your time to talk a little crap to me, because he's looking good. He's looking really good. And like, same with you. I'm not declaring he's some, you know, I'm not declaring we're about to see the, you know, I'm not declaring the Kawhi comparisons are legitimate yet. You know, Kawhi's a top five player. That's not what we're talking about here. But he's looked like a different guy. He's progressing. He's doing it in a different way. Very encouraging for the long term. Very encouraging for the long term. This is good stuff that he's doing right now.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, I really hope life is a series of leaps, because if it's just a leap, I must have missed mine at some point, and I'm really hoping that's not the case. I feel like I actually did make some strides here during this pandemic. It's given me time to reflect on a few things and get some crap straightened out, but hopefully there's more room for jumping, because hey, otherwise
my daily leap is from like my bed to my lazy boy at this point. And that's where I'm leaping from these days.
There is that. Yeah, you know what? I mean, look, we always talk, at least, you know, we end up talking big picture a lot about the Wizards, because the small view is not very exciting, you know, battling for the 10th seed or whatever's going on here. The bigger picture view is, if Rui Hachimura is a guy who that next year they can count on, and I don't want to put stats on anything, but if he's a guy you can count on to be a consistent performer on both ends of the court, to go with a healthy Beal and a healthy Westbrook. And obviously they're going to have to figure out some things, you know, what are they going to do at center, but they also have this potential, this lottery pick, we'll just say, who knows where it'll be. Plus, Denny Avdia, you know, the confidence he was showing earlier in the year is kind of waning right now. This does happen, as Scott Brooks said tonight. So, you know, presumably we'll see a better version of him next year, and we'll see what else to do in free agency. And like, again, I'm not getting like getting crazy, but this is how you talk yourself into the Wizards being at least interesting next year, you know, in terms of making the playoffs or whatever. It's stuff like this. And I will also say, from a bigger picture perspective, I think I've mentioned this before, but, you know, I don't think we know exactly what's going to happen this offseason in terms of the coaching situation and the front office and all that. And, you know, who knows, maybe it's just a clean the house situation. But if there's an actual evaluation of Tommy Shepard, I think that Rui Hachimura one is the big one to consider, because he's basically, you know, there have been several interesting moves over the last couple of years. I'm assuming the Russell Westbrook, John Wall trade ownership signed off on that, if not pushed for it. At a certain point, therefore, the draft picks are the things that the GM, to me, are the big things that he's going to get judged on. Anybody reasonable would give him a pass on Denny, just simply because it's still early, and Denny was largely fine most of the year. But Rui was, well, we weren't getting a ton. We are more lately, and if this keeps up the rest of the way, I think that's a pretty fair thing to say. Hey, you know, not everybody agreed with that pick, and Rui Hachimura is looking like a good thing. So, I think that would bode well for Tommy Shepard if there is to be some sort of evaluation or anything along those lines.
Yeah. I mean, he's been good, man. He's been good. I don't even want to make any grand proclamations in any direction. You know, in the spirit of Russell Westbrook saying the media says what a guy is and that's what he's stuck with being. I don't even want to make any grand proclamations on what this means. It's 10 games. There's no reason to. But he's been very good over these 10 games. He just had 30 on Tuesday night against Charlotte on 12 of 24 shooting. He was good and he was moving off the ball and he hit a catch and shoot three buzzer beater with a really quick release and it looked fluid. He's you know, hitting his mid-range shots off the dribble. We knew he could do that. Again, he's hitting those at a higher rate than he's going to over the course of a year. He's not going to shoot 55% from mid-range over the course of a season. Nobody does that other than KD in a career year. That's the only time that happens. But you know, he's a good mid-range shooter. If the three ball comes and he ends up being a 37, 38% three-point shooter, he's able to take five of those a game. You know, it doesn't have to become the main point of his game, but the other smaller things are coming. If he is going to be the number one guy in an offense, what he needs to do is, number one, he needs to develop the handle. And number two, he needs to develop his passing. A lot of it is decision-making with the passing. It's not just like assists and facilitating. It's decision making, whether he has the ball or not. The off ball decision making has gotten a little better and the handle is not there. You can tell when he gets defensive rebounds and pushes in transition that he's hesitant about the handle. It's high. It's not shifty. You know, we'll see how that develops. Lead ball handlers, when you see guys make real leaps, like true leaps, like Bradley Beal level leaps, it's always in the handle. With Giannis, it's in the handle. You know, with all these guys who make these giant leaps, Paul George tightened his handle. All these guys, it's their handle. So many of these guys. And, you know, Rui, I don't think it's not fair to guess he's going to be that kind of player. I don't expect that at all. We're talking about those, you know, top level players, but that's how those guys made those leaps. And, you know, if he's going to be a guy who, you know, like the way they talk about him on the broadcasts and stuff, if he's going to be that, you know, the handle has to come. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. But there's, you know what, 11 minutes, more than 11 minutes of Wizards optimism. How about that?
Definitely a record with me on the podcast. So that's pretty cool. It's always nice to, you know, to set a new mark, a new standard. Pretty cool.
I mean, it's crazy that they're, after tonight, I guess they're 2.5 games back of 10th in the East. And coming into tonight, you know, they had the easiest remaining strength and schedule in the league. Like they could get in. It's amazing watching the Rui stretch come now, because the offense is just, it's so weird hearing them talk about, yeah, you know, because whenever they talk about the defense being good, or the defense, I'm sorry, being troubled, they say something about how, well, you know, offense isn't our problem. It's always some kind of line like that. And I don't know if it's just kind of because it's only human to compartmentalize and say, like, okay, we're the team that is the offensive slanted team. They are offensive slanted, but offense is their problem. You know, I know they have injuries tonight. I know, but, you know, I know Beal's not there. Obviously, that hurts you a ton. I know Bertans is out, but it's not like Bertans was having the same season he was coming into the year.
Can I tell you that, like, I was watching I have not been watching much the last 2 weeks between free agency and the NCAA tournament and just whatever. But, like, watching the game tonight, I swear I forgot that Bertans was hurt. That's how not much of a factor I'm viewing him right now.
I mean, the lack of shooting they have on the roster is just amazing. And when for some reason they played Jerome Robinson 36 minutes when Garrison Matthews is right there, I don't really know how Garrison Matthews went from starting 15 or 17 or however many games he started to playing 12 minutes when Beal and Neto are hurt. He's the only guy in the rotation the only guy in the rotation who has a 3-point percentage above league average. He is the only guy in the rotation who's an above average 3-point shooter when Neto and Beal and Bertans are all hurt. Who is, let me ask you this, besides Matthews, who's their second best 3-point shooter who played tonight?
Cassius Winston.
Yeah. Like legit.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Well, like I'm a believer, like, especially in what looks like a short circumstance with Beal, hopefully, you know, if you have people in certain roles, especially bench guys, like some people just do come up and do perform better off the bench. I'm a believer in sort of leaving people in those roles and then maybe bringing somebody deeper in the rotation into the starting lineup. But that doesn't mean you play them 36 minutes. Like the idea, like, I mean, if the, I don't know what they're doing. If the goal is to win the game, I don't, how many minutes did Matthews play?
Matthews played 15 minutes and Robinson played 36.
Yeah. I mean, let me not turn Matthews into Chris Mullin, but like, he's a guy who's obviously been, you've been starting him. He's been playing. He's like you said, he's a one guy that can make a shot. He plays with confidence, all that stuff. You know, if you say just at a basic level, who's going to be on your team next year? Garrison Matthews, yes. Jerome Robinson, I was going to say, I would, you know, don't send your laundry out. You know what I mean? And yet you're playing him. Like, on no level does it make any sense. Again, if you want to start him to leave, if you'd rather have Matthews come off the bench, I'm fine with that. But the minutes have got to be switched, 36 to 15 the other way.
Yeah, it's very weird. I don't really understand, especially when I asked Scott Brooks about it after the game, and he said, yeah, you know, when the healthy guys come back, you know, Robinson's going to go back to not playing. He said he prefers Matthews off the bench, which, again, I'm fine with. Starters are kind of overrated. It's fine. It's more about minutes distribution and how many lineup, you know, how many players you play with how many lineups. I'm not saying starters aren't important. They are. They're just a little overrated. Minutes distribution and what kind of lineups you play throughout the course of the game, who you close with, all that stuff is more important than starters. If you start the right guys and then play all the wrong lineups and rotate everybody wrong and play the wrong closers, that's worse than the opposite, you know? So, yeah, it's really weird to hear Brooks be like, you know, say he played solidly defensively and say he's playing all right and hasn't shot the ball very well and yet see the minutes break down. I don't know. Is it possible I'm misreading this and this is a stealth tank? I do not think it's a stealth tank based on the way that they based on the way that they handle the trade deadline. Like, why would you keep Bradley Beal and then tank? Why would you keep Robin Lopez and then tank, you know?
It's 100% not a tank.
Yeah. I mean, also, if you're going to tank, you tank with the right guys. I mean, they didn't pick up Jerome Robinson's fourth year option. You know, Matthews is a guy who I think they'd like. He's a free agent after this year, but I think he's restricted and I think they would like to make him part of their future. I would not be surprised if he were back. As a matter of fact, I think I'd be surprised if he weren't back. You know, if you're tanking, you're playing Bonga, right? You're not playing Robinson. I don't know. It's just weird, man. You're playing Chandler Hutchinson if you're tanking and seeing if you have anything there. Like,
yeah, I mean, Anthony Gill is playing. You're using Robin Lopez less. I mean, whatever. And also, I mean, like, we know the whole thing has been they're trying to make the playoffs. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I would just chalk it up to Scott Brooks' rotations almost never make sense to me. I mean, like, if I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that he wants to bring Matthews off the bench and get him established in that role, cool. But then, you know, what was happening here for the last 15 or so games? You just decided this now at the point when you do have some injuries, you trade Troy Brown. Like, I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, not a tank. It's just odd.
What'd you think of the trade, by the way? I haven't had you on since the deadline. I had DA on after the deadline. We're talking about how you were the man known around town. What?
This is true.
what did you, so Wizards send out Troy Brown, send Troy Brown to the Bulls, send Mo Wagner to the Celtics, bring back Daniel Gafford, who unfortunately got hurt, played really well for a game and a half, and then sprained his ankle and is now going to be reevaluated in 10 days, the team just said, which doesn't mean he's back in 10 days. It means he's reevaluated in 10 days, and they brought back Chandler Hutchison also. What's the Ben Standing analysis here? I got to hear it. We haven't even really talked about it that much other than our Slack.
I like Gafford. I remember the year he came out, I try to, do some, digging into those things at that mock drafty kind of stuff at that time. And, I remember Gafford being told by somebody that, there was teams that were considering him in the first round. And you had kind of heard some of that leading into it. And ultimately, he didn't go in the first round. And then when you saw him play, again, not saying he's Shaq, but, he's definitely a lively body. He's energetic. He gets up. He is a type of player the Wizards really haven't had much lately. A big man who can get above the rim. The JaVale McGee comparisons, minus the wayward ball handling up the court. kind of makes sense. And I think, one of the, we've talked, to some degree, is like, well, what is Troy Brown? Like you obviously talked about a lot. Does he have any value? It's kind of like, not really. And it was just a matter of, I guess, as we discussed, and you wrote about, was there a situation in which the Wizards could get somebody else to be like, we're kind of frustrated with this situation, but we'll take your thing. And I kind of like Gafford. Hutchison didn't really know much about it other than he was a first-round pick, and I don't think he had done too much. So that one to me was a total wild card. But for Gafford, especially considering the Wizards' center position, I thought that was a worthy shot.
Yeah, he's talented. I see why people would like him. I see why the Wizards would like him. He's really athletic and he jumps really, really high. And there are a lot of guys that are like that now. But if you can actually develop a legitimately good one, I think kind of in a worst case scenario, who's he going to be? Worst case, like he's going to be a solid enough backup center, right? I mean, as long as he stays healthy and can stay on the floor and maybe learns a little more. I shouldn't say that's the worst case. That's not really the worst case. But his realistic case is what? Like, you can make a realistic argument. He becomes Nerlens Noel, right? That's not his worst case. That's a realistic case if you want to talk about who could he become here. He could become Nerlens Noel. Noel with better hands, he could do that.
And even if he's never a starter, like he just doesn't develop into that type of player, like he is the type of guy, the type of big man that I like coming off the bench. Energy, shot blocking, above the rim. Like, he does some specific things. And, it doesn't always work this way, but you like to kind of view your bench as – helping you, it's like I said, bring some, have a pulse coming into the game, and he would be that type of guy. So, I think that'd be interesting. And plus, like on this team specifically, he's got that energy. I keep saying to play with Westbrook, I would think, and that would go well. I could see that being some sort of, I don't know if pick and roll is the right way to phrase it, but some lob situations for sure. So, I think he's interesting. And all things considered, considering how Troy Brown, seemingly was a completely devalued asset based on how they've been using him, to get somebody who, again, I'm not saying they've solved their center position, but to get somebody who looks like could be a rotation piece, again, whatever Chandler Hutchison is, he looked great in the first game today, not as much. But we'll see. Gafford alone would be fine. I mean, I'm not discounting Mo Wagner, but, Mo Wagner kind of, semi-disposable piece. But Troy Brown was a recent first-round pick for them. And to get anything based on how things were going, I think is a pretty good thing.
Yeah, the issue with the trade was not the trade itself. The issue with the trade was the process leading up to the trade, which made the trade necessary, which was them devaluing somebody who they should have been investing in. By year three, you shouldn't be saying, what is Troy Brown? And I don't think Scott Brooks was wondering, for what it's worth, what is Troy Brown? I think it's pretty clear Scott Brooks didn't think Troy Brown was somebody who was going to help. If he did, would have played him. But they did not let's put it this way. Did they not put as much value into developing Troy Brown as they did with someone like, say, Rui? Now Rui is a better player right now than Troy Brown, for sure. I mean, look at what he's doing. He's a better player than Troy Brown. But it's not exactly like this was a team, even though it was trying to win 2 out of the 3 years that Brown has been in the league, hasn't actually been successful in doing so. And it put the attempt of winning, the possibility of winning, it's how much it wanted to try to win, it put ahead of Brown's development. And that was the flaw with the Troy Brown trade. It's a little bit more existential than just, do you evaluate this trade and just the trade as itself? Ultimately, it's not going to kill you. None of these guys are going to become all-stars who you look back on and they're like, oh man, can't believe that one, you know?
So like one of the, you mentioned, that had Michael Lee on the podcast and, that went up this week and we talked at length about, you know, it wasn't exactly a positive conversation, but we tried to come up with some actionable ideas, not just keep simply saying the same things over and over again. But one thing we pointed to, and he and I have had this conversation many times before, is when you play for the short term, as the Wizards do over and over again, you end up playing for this game as opposed to the long haul. And what that can do at times is you don't invest, as we're discussing, in players that you either invested in because like they spent a first round pick on Troy Brown, just like they did with Jan Vesely, just like they did with Otto Porter and so on. And then you don't then follow through putting them in the best position, playing them where they need to be played, or even just like when you drafted them in the first place, what was the vision to do it? And honestly, you know, without getting into all that stuff, you can go, you know, people can make fun of Jan Vesely all they want. They did not fully commit to him after his first year. Otto Porter, there were definitely times, obviously they invested him in the money, but like there were definitely times where it was like, Scott Brooks, like, why are you playing him this way? Why are you not giving Otto Porter the ball when Isaiah Thomas is guarding him in the playoffs? Like they don't, you know, other than like the star players, they seem to struggle investing in some of these guys. That's why it's interesting to see Rui come aboard, and that's why it'll be interesting to see what happens to Denny, who's going through a bit of a you know, slump, we'll say, right now. Is, you know, what's the next step to get them out of that, but also to help them succeed? And maybe they don't. Maybe Troy Brown is never more than what he is, and that's a different conversation about why to draft him in the first place. But it's pretty hard to look at it and say they did whatever they could to put it. I mean, this is only his third year. it's more of an indictment on the process that it's always about the short term, not about the long term. It's about, as we've discussed, making the eighth seed rather than, wait, what are we actually trying to do here? Take a big swing or go backwards the other way, you know, not this sort of middle ground. And that's kind of feels like what they kind of are constantly in the mode of doing here throughout the years.
Look at you. I got you right in your wheelhouse. I got you right there.
It's, you know, look, this is a pretty, it's pretty easy to tee me up for this stuff. Like I pretty much live for this stuff. But if you ever do like a Lost TV series After Dark, you can get me in my wheelhouse on that show too. I have takes, but I don't know if you're into that one. So,
should we take a Twitter question?
You asked them, so you might as well.
I did ask them. I am going to take a Twitter question. You know what? I'm going to take a group Twitter question because shockingly, as I've said on this podcast before, I had a name for this segment, didn't I? I think the name of the segment was taking Twitter questions and answering them on the podcast. I'm going to come up with a jingle for next week. We're going to run it right before I take Twitter questions and answer them on the podcast. We're going to call it Taking Twitter Questions and Answering Them on the Podcast. Shockingly, every time I tweet anything that has anything to do with the Wizards, I get 900 people texting me or tweeting me about Scott Brooks. And I had to stop looking at my mentions, not because of that, but because Twitter is incredibly toxic. And shockingly, toxic Twitter culture carries into fans who are pissed off with their coach of a losing team. And so I have a million questions here about Scott Brooks and Scott Brooks' future employment. And I'm going to gel them into one. And I'm going to ask you, Ben, what do you make of Scott Brooks this season? And what do you make of his 5 years that he's been here with the Wizards?
Wait, can I just tell you, we have breaking news. I just got followed on Twitter by Greg Olson, the former Orioles pitcher, who was
the rookie
of the rookie of the year in 89. I mean, unfortunately, he's going through some tough medical situation, and I just followed him. But like, he just followed me back, and it just reminded me of when I was a kid at one point rooting for that guy.
Greg Olson, not the tight end. You're sure it wasn't correct. The tight end, Greg Olson?
Yes, he just retired. Longtime Panthers. Yes, Greg Olson, the Orioles pitcher, who had this ridiculous curve, the classic 12-6 curve. Was with him and Ben McDonald, I thought we were going to win World Series year after year. That did not happen. What do I think of Scott Brooks this year? You really are just trying to like get me going here. It's probably not a complete fair thing for me to say, because I'm not in, you know, for the first time really in the last, you know, certainly the Scott Brooks era and really for a long time, I'm not remotely in the day to day. Obviously, the pandemic has something to do with that, because even last year when I was covering the football team, I was still going to pretty much every home game, you know, as many as I could make at least, and more invested. This year, obviously, haven't, you know, not going to any games. So not around the team, not around the players. And then even more than that, you know, just, you know, the world is weird, and I've just been focusing on my day-to-day job. That said, obviously I do pay attention, and you know, to me, it's a lot of the same things. I mean, I think the rotations drive me insane. His explanations sometimes for things kind of baffle me for sure. And, you know, I still maintain that, not necessarily tonight when you look at a team, as you said, that's missing so many guys with injuries, and they've had a lot of that at times this year, but I still maintain that there's more here than they have shown on a consistent basis. I'm not saying, not meaning they're a top four seed, but you know, there's a team here that should be more consistent. We see them do well against better teams and then, you know, come up very small against, you know, teams comparable to them. And that to me, I'm not saying it's always about the coaching staff, but when it happens over and over again, it is. So, you know, look, it's a tough year for everybody. I kind of give almost every single person in human a pass, you know, this year when it comes to like evaluation and sports. But in his case, it's his last year of his deal. And I don't see how, based on what we've seen, how, you know, how there's any justification for saying they should move forward with this. So I don't know if that's what you wanted to hear. But, I mean – you know, there's always some positive things. I give him the fact that he's upbeat, and it's not easy, especially in that job when everybody is constantly coming at you. But at the same time, I've just been scratching my head for too long to really understand kind of what's going on sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are certain head scratchers. The rotational stuff. Here's the thing with Scott Brooks as a coach, his strengths. And this is why he's always criticized. Scott Brooks' strengths as a coach are in the subtleties that people don't really see. And that's not the public's fault. It's people like us. It's our jobs to make sure people get as much of the full picture as possible. But even we can't always do that, because we don't even get the full picture. We get more of a picture than people who aren't around the team all the time, but especially during a year like this. I mean, I've talked about this a little bit on the podcast, but I try not to bring it up too much because I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, because I get to watch the NBA every day. That's my job. It's pretty freaking cool, you know? So I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, but you know, it's a lot harder to do our job right now during the pandemic, where we are not in locker rooms. We're not on the court. We're not talking to people. We just talk to people on Zooms. I mean, you know, a Zoom is like, what percentage of reporting would you say that press conferences are? Like group media availabilities like the Zooms. I mean, it's such a small percentage of what goes into being a good reporter, right? And telling a full story. So much of it is background and conversations and being able to see things in person. You know, I used to have a journalism teacher who used to say, your two best sources are your two eyeballs. And our eyeballs are just shaded over right now, you know, because we're not around stuff to see things. We're not at practices. We're not seeing those sorts of things. You know, I wrote an anecdote I was really excited about with Bradley Beal about a year and a half ago, where I talked about a fight that Beal and Tom, a verbal fight that Beal and Thomas Bryant got into at practice in the start of training camp in 2019. And I didn't know that because of sources. I was just there for it. And I built up enough trust with those guys where I was able to then go and talk to those guys about that one-on-one and ask them what that was like for them and kind of learning through. You know, I was able to write the story about Beal teaching through conflict, and they were both cool enough to talk to me about it really openly. And it was super cool, both of them, to be able to do that. And that kind of stuff you don't get. And what I'm getting at is I find it very difficult to evaluate that part of coaching this year, because that's something I try to keep an eye on. And I just find it difficult to evaluate coaching through press conferences. And the stuff that we see with Brooks is just, those are his more obvious flaws, right? Like the rotation stuff, which, you know, we were literally just talking about Jerome Robinson, the inconsistency with Garrison Matthews. You know, that kind of stuff is obvious. Their defense has lacked principles. I genuinely don't know who deserves, like, I don't know what the pie chart looks like that for that. You know, I don't know how much of that is Brooks. I don't know how much is Mike Longobardi, who's their defensive coordinator. I don't know how much of that is Robert Pack, who is, you know, a very high up assistant for them, or Tony Brown, who's a very high up assistant for them, and so on and so forth. Like, I don't know, but ultimately Brooks is the head coach, and they've consistently been a bottom five defense that has lacked principle and lacked cohesion and lacked defensive communication. The head coach has to take some of that too. At the same time, I think he has been a really good coach for, say, Thomas Bryant. I think he's been a really good coach for Thomas Bryant in his development, with the way that he communicated how to turn him into a role man and a screener, and then built out his role, turned him into more of a three-point shooter. I think we've seen Thomas Bryant grow. I think we've seen him how to learn how to play the game in a way that's fit him and been specific to him. I think he's been good for him. I think he's been good for Rui, with the way that he's kind of constantly had faith in him and talked to him. You know, he wasn't a good coach for Troy Brown. You know, I think we kind of look black and white at coaches. He's not, somebody asked me recently, is he getting extended? He's not getting extended. You know, I don't want to say what I think is going to happen after this season, because I'd rather just say that I'm not saying than say something and be wrong. Cause as a reporter, I have a little more at stake there than just like random person talking. But, you know, I think part of it depends on what they want to do this offseason too, like what direction they're going to go in and what they're going to try to do next year. And are they going to tear it all apart, or are they going to go and try to win? And it's just too early for me to know on that kind of stuff with any sort of certainty. So I don't know what's going to happen on that front. But I don't know. That's my long, winding, more nuanced answer on Scott Brooks this year, because I almost never like, with, there are very, very few coaches who I believe is like, that guy is a good coach independent of the situation. You know, I thought Brooks didn't do a good job 2 years ago, because that team's chemistry was bad and they didn't play hard. And it wasn't just him. The personalities on that team didn't work. That was the year where they had, you know, the practice where everybody was angry at everybody and it all got out, and John Wall cursed him out and got fined for it. And, you know, all that stuff, right? And that team was just like, you know, Brooks was constantly talking about how they didn't play hard. I mean, I thought, you know, he didn't do a great job that year. I thought he did a pretty good job last year, putting together an offense that worked, putting together a team where everybody came out and played really hard. I thought they played over their heads for most of the season. I actually thought he did do a pretty good job developing talent. You know, it's just hard with context too. You know, it's the last year of his deal. He's a lamed up coach. He has to win. Part of it is on the organization too, where they're saying, you got to win. So he's not going to be as comfortable playing a 21-year-old, you know? It's just like so much of this stuff steeps into other parts of the organization. And it's hard for me with most coaches to say, you know, short of Greg Popovich, Nick Nurse, Eric Spoelstra, Rick Carlisle, Tom Thibodeau, I think is really great. But even Tom Thibodeau is situational and has like these massive, seemingly never going to be fixed flaws, you know, with overplaying players and that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. Is that too politically correct? Is that too diplomatic, Ben?
Probably, but that's why I'm here to be the asshole. So it's fine. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't disagree that I will just say this, like a lot of this, you know, these things come down to personality as well. Like a turning point for me with Brooks, his first year here, they win 49 games. They get to game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. There were still some concerns going forward because they just traded away the first round pick to get Bogdanovich and get rid of Nicholson. So that was going to be a hit. I mean, the Mahimi thing was already looking dicey and all that, but okay, still you had this team, that was coming off this high. And to me, this was the moment. Scott Brooks was never going to have more power, most likely, or he had as much power right then as you could possibly get realistically. And this is where we get 4 years later. You talk about that team a couple years ago that just really did not, you know, the chemistry wasn't there. I just think, you know, Brooks, if you talk about his flaws, among them is he lets his star players get away with a lot of stuff. Russell Westbrook is a classic example, both places he's had him. And I think that happened here too. And he had the opportunity to rein some things in. And I think I'm not saying it's all on him by any stretch of the imagination. There's an owner, there's a GM and all that. But like he himself had a lot of that juice because of all these things. I mean, and he didn't, ultimately it's not seemingly in his nature to put a foot down and really to say, hey, buddies, guys, this is how we're doing things. I know we just came in here, we did some good stuff, but this is what we're going to do. And if you have an issue with it, you know, what do you want me to tell you? I'm the coach. I got 4 years left on my deal. I'm making good money. I'm good. You want to get me, you know, get me fired? Go ahead. But I'm here. We're not going anywhere. And we want to go to another level. We can do it. But this is how we're doing it. And he didn't do that as far as I can tell based on everything that's happened since. And, you know, I just think – some of it's a personality thing. And yeah, there is something to be said for the whole organization as a whole, as I just mentioned a few minutes ago. But I mean, for him specifically, that to me was a big turning point. And, you know, he had the chance, I think, to really set the tone for whatever it is that he envisioned. But ultimately, he just is the guy that kind of lets his stars do what they do. And I think that's kind of why we got to where we are.
You got anything to plug before we wrap?
Mo Wagner's brother just airballed the potential go-ahead shot like inside of 10 seconds left in this UCLA Michigan game. That's not a plug. That's just an update. I have a podcast, Standing Room Only. Go check that out. I did talk about the Wizard this week, but mostly it's the football team. The NFL draft is happening. If you're into the draft, come listen.
Go check it out. Go subscribe to The Athletic. You can subscribe for $1 a month if you go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark. $1 a month. It's such a good deal. If you are listening to this podcast, you enjoy this podcast, you've listened to this podcast for this long, for like 40 minutes, go subscribe to The Athletic. You get a full subscription to The Athletic, not just the Wizards, not just my work, not just Ben's work. Everything, MLB, NBA, WNBA, NFL, NHL, all of it, everything we cover. You get everything if you just go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark and you sign up for $1 a month. Theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark. Tell your friends about the podcast. If you know, always welcome in new listeners. Go rate it if you really like it. Go to iTunes, leave a review, give us 5 stars. That always helps a ton. And that's it. I'll be back with another episode maybe later this week. If not, then I'll do early next week. I'll figure it out. Either way, whenever it is, I'll talk to you guys then.